Welcome to the quarterly audio series of the North & Shantz Consulting Group. We call this series Straightforward, and it's designed to provide you with direction for your future. In this edition, Roger welcomes his guest, Marlon Horst of Premier Custom Build Incorporated. Roger and Marlon will be discussing Marlon's leadership journey. Now from the North & Shantz Consulting Group, here's Roger North.
Marlon Horst, welcome to Straightforward.
Well, thank you, Roger. It's a real privilege to be here. We've worked pretty hard over a year or so to try to set this up, and I've been looking forward to it.
That's great. Well, the day has arrived, and I'd just love to hear, as I know our friends would love to hear, the history of Premier Custom Built, how you got started, which I think was 1991, and just kind of walk us through the vision for Premier and how it's developed over the last 14 years.
Well, it's really interesting. From a young man, I had a real heart for craftsmanship. Started out building things, making things, working with my dad. My dad was a carpenter. We had a cabinet shop through high school. After high school, I was too busy working to go to college. Didn't seem to have time, even though I was accepted at Laterno. I had a desire to be a mechanical engineer, but work always took its place.
Okay.
But the way God had my life planned, I soon found myself in positions of leading people through the crafts, and I've had opportunity to do lots of different things, but always ended up in a leadership position of leading people.
Marlon, do you think that occurred because you did a job well, a craft job well? Do you think that occurred more because people recognized some, shall we say, natural leadership abilities in you, or was it some sort of combination of the two?
That's a really good question. I loved everything I ever did. There was never a job that I had that I didn't like.
That's a great thing to be able to say.
And I think what happens in a lot of cases, passion rises to the top. And in industry, we oftentimes see those that are really, really good with their hands get sometimes promoted, and maybe not rightfully so. For me, it was always a good move and always a good fit to be able to take on leadership responsibilities.
So there's probably a combination of both. You were doing your job well, and you were gifted from a craftsmanship standpoint, but also perhaps from a leading standpoint.
Yeah, and the interesting thing was I never asked for a job. Jobs always seemed to be there. I loved every one of them. I applied myself. I learned a lot of skills. And so by 1991, I had been involved with one company where I developed the company from scratch, built a very profitable organization, left that company, joined a cabinet-making firm, a local firm, and helped that company grow from a small startup stage to a very significant company throughout the national market area.
Neither of those were companies in which you had ownership.
I had no ownership.
Okay.
And really, at that point, had really put ownership as something that would probably never occur.
Okay.
You know, my goal in life was never to go out and make a million, so to speak, you know, to become wealthy through business. I was caught up in enjoying those involvements and really never thought that business, my own business, would be an option. But the way the Lord had it, in 1991, I lost my job. I was a senior manager in a company, and as a result of some changes and some developments that occurred, I find myself without a job. That was a very difficult time of life. But the Lord had a plan, and through that, by His grace, I was able to forgive the men that were involved in those decisions and was able to step aside that and not allow that to overcome me.
How quickly, Marlon, did that transformation, I want to say, in your thinking occur? Because we certainly see how we all struggle sometimes with, a popular word is baggage, taking along the past with us and allowing it to affect how we think about the future. What maybe thinking disciplines or spiritual disciplines did you apply to bring yourself through what must have been a pretty challenging time in your life? Because you were somewhat at midlife at that point in your early 40s, your productive stage of life.
42 years of age.
Okay.
You know, that's an interesting question. The fact that I probably was not money motivated. I was motivated to create, to make, to be, to see things develop, to solve problems. And my wife and I were fortunate at that point. We had disciplined our financial life in a way that we weren't encumbered. We weren't threatened financially. So that gave us some freedom.
Some freedom.
We learned those principles. I became a student of Larry Burkett. I studied his work. I built my business plan for Premier right out of his book, Business by the Book.
Okay.
Used some of those principles. He taught debt-free living, and we tried to practice that. I believe that probably financial freedom was probably the most significant impact on not being able to become hostile and being able to forgive and to move on.
Sure. And yet, at that point in your life, owning your own business, being your own boss, that sort of language was not necessarily a part of the way you thought about your future.
No, being my own boss was something I felt very comfortable with because I just assumed that position in all the career jobs I
had. Okay,
okay. There wasn't a career management job that I had that I didn't really see it as my own.
Okay.
You know, I just took ownership to it. And even though I didn't own it, I lived my life as I owned it. And so having my own business didn't change that. Nothing really changed. And fact is, I believe because I learned to serve others, I was able then to bring that role of serving into the creation of a business and really conceive that the most valuable role that I play as a leader today is the role of serving. I serve my people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't serve me.
Mm.
I serve them, and I pick out very strategic ways of doing that. There are certain tasks in our business today that I maintain because they have service orientations.
So you could easily delegate them or someone else could easily do them, but you hold on to them because they exemplify the way that you want to live.
Fact is, Dennis Clemmer, who works with us very closely, has suggested a number of times that I consider delegating certain things, and I hang on to them because they're my way of continuing to live out the service model.
I understand.
And one quick example of that, I do a lot of buying. There's a lot of purchasing that is very routine, and I've delegated that. There are certain areas of purchasing in our company that require sophisticated understanding of the product
sure.
that we're buying.
Particularly lumber?
Yeah, lumber, veneer, and that type of thing. But I still maintain a certain level of service buying. And the reason for it is simply this. When my people give me a requisition, they have a need. I can be too busy or I can come up with 40 excuses why I didn't get it done, and that's not serving them. And every week, every day, I need to perform so that they can perform. And it's just a way that keeps me in check for myself because it keeps me in understanding of my priorities and that also I enjoy serving them.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy making sure that they have what they need to do the job because they can't do it if I don't provide it. Plus, it's a way that they can see an example. Because I want them to do the same thing for their people.
Certainly.
You know, to serve their people.
So it's a modeling technique.
It's a modeling technique, yeah. And I just kind of hang on to that. I don't know how long I'll be able to do that particular role, but I hope that in my leadership career as a business owner that I'll always be able to have a function that is service-oriented, that people can depend on me for that. And they know if I failed and they know if I succeed. If I fail, I admit my failure and say I'm sorry and try to make it right. If we succeed, we all gain.
Terrific focus. Tell us a little bit about what Premier produces.
We produce high-end custom cabinetry. It's really a Vogue product. It's a designer product.
When you say a Vogue product, help me with that term.
Well, in the fashion industry, Vogue would be leading edge, state-of-the-art,
okay.
the current design, the last model, you
okay.
know, the one that goes down the runway.
All right.
And we don't necessarily think of home furnishings in that, but they are very, very designer-driven. The fabric textile industry drives the color market around the world. And so in home furnishings, Vogue is very much on the forefront for the wealthy, people that are at the leading edge of purchasing home furnishings. So we build what we would call as Vogue cabinetry. It's form over function. Even though we build an extremely functional product, probably a wear forever, it's a lot about form. It's a lot about style. It's a lot about image. It's a lot about look what I have.
And that's what your buyers are looking for.
That's what our buyers are looking for. We sell through a group of professional kitchen designers, very strategically selected and chosen throughout the United States. And all the jobs are designed and sold consumer direct. There's no contractors. There's no other middle people in between. And
so it's Premier. The designer
and the,
and
client,
the homeowners.
And the client. And as a result, we've positioned ourselves in the multi-million dollar home market. I used to say million dollar and up. Today, it's probably more like $5 to $8 to $10 million and up. We do projects that are $20-$30 million in size. So that's really stretched our concept of stewardship. For years, I used to come back to my people and I'd say, you know, nobody needs what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time that I used to feel a little guilty.
Struggle with that idea a little bit?
Really struggle with it from our conservative upbringing. You know,
sure.
It's kind of like we're helping these people acquire more and more. Until I discovered through studying God's word and the way that I believe God has really positioned man on this earth, wealth has been with us from the very, very beginning, and it's been the kings and the rulers and the large landowners of history that have precipitated an income and an economy for those of us that are the workers. And we need to be thankful for that. It's provision that God has given to us. And the people that we serve today are the wealthy of the land, and they create an economy. And so today, rather than feeling guilty, I feel grateful for the opportunity to serve these clients. And our job is clear to me. It is simply to give them more than they expect and to give them value. And even though we would probably have opportunity on a consistent basis of charging them more than what the product's really worth, because there's no way to place value necessarily on a super custom product, our task is simply to give them the best value.
Absolutely.
And never ever
charge more than they expect.
And more than they expect. As a result of doing that, we've been blessed. We do not have a marketing program in our company. I have no salespeople on the road. We spend very little money as a percent of sales in marketing our product. We've just taken on the simple marketing concept. If you like what we've done and we've done well for you, tell your friends. And we've succeeded with that.
Would a number of your clients be repeat in the sense that they might own multiple properties and therefore...
In the fashion industry, fashion typically only lasts a year. So you buy a designer suit, it's only good for a year, though it would last a lifetime. And that's somewhat of that same concept is true in home furnishings, even though the life is longer than a year. But it's not uncommon for our designers to do multiple kitchens for a client over their lifetime as the styles change. Also, people in that income bracket have multiple homes.
Yes.
And so, therefore, our designers often find themselves being asked to travel to other places to do similar projects.
And would you then have opportunity to supply internationally?
Oh, yeah. We do have a design firm in Hawaii, even though that's America. It's still
across the,
across the ocean.
One of the ponds.
We've shipped product to Europe. We've shipped product to the Far East. So we have product around the world. That's not something that we pursue, but
it happens
possible.
as a result of giving
relationships.
More than you expect to the people you're working with.
Absolutely.
Marlon, I remember the first time that you and Dennis and I, Dennis Klemmer, my partner, sat down to talk about how we might engage with your company and how we might be able to help you accomplish some of your objectives was back in 2000. And one of the concepts that you shared with us at that time, which I think is still alive and well in your company at Premier, is that of being a limited growth company. And I remember where we were sitting in our office when you introduced that concept as one that you understood and wanted to work with. And I remember how it got my mind going and you started talking about what that meant. Share with us a little bit about what that has meant for Premier and how you've kept that in focus.
The understanding of limited growth came out of my experience of managing craft industry.
Okay.
There's two types of manufacturing. I would understand manufacturing as building what I would call 14-inch green widget manufacturing, where you build the same thing on the semi-lines punch press operation. An automobile factory would be the height of that.
Very repetitive.
Very repetitive, even though they build a lot of variety. And then you have craft. And craft is typically thought of as one or two guys in a little shop somewhere along a street, a shoemaker pounding out one piece at a time. And really, our business is very much a craft business. Everything we build is custom-oriented. It's done for a specific application. So it's craft, and it requires a passion. It's not something that you learn in school. You don't get a degree. There's no Ivy League institution giving a degree in cabinet making, even though I do have a Ph.D. in cabinet making.
We're just not sure what the Ph. and D.
stand
for.
That's right, right, right. And I don't have a piece of paper to prove it, but I have a life of experience. And so that creates an interesting business dynamic when you really push it out. And a number of companies that have preceded us have tried to grow their businesses bigger and bigger. As a result, they take on management complexity and overhead that have positions that are often filled with people that do not have the craft passion. They may have the education, they may have an industry experience, but they may not have the passion. And so the passion somewhat gets watered down and it begins to dilute the craft. And when the craft is diluted, the business begins to suffer. The margins deteriorate. Overhead goes up. The people with the real understanding of the product become diminished or diluted.
Yes.
And the company just falls apart. And in our industry, unfortunately, we have a whole line of companies that have went down
that
road.
A number of stories that illustrate that concept.
So my concept in 1991 was to build a company that would have a predetermined growth cycle. And I coined that as the limited growth company. I don't know if that was my coining or something I picked up. Another philosophy I have in life is you stand on the shoulders of giants. So I'm sure somewhere some giant figured that out. And I was given that thought. And limited growth to me in 1991 was 50 employees, 50,000 square feet of manufacturing space, and $5 million in annual sales.
Well, five and, theme going.
Yeah,
there.
I had the five theme going. Yeah, it's kind of repetitious, but I like that kind of thing. Uh-huh. And the reason for that all was is that I had managed 50-person groups before. I felt really comfortable with that.
You could deal well with that size, keep the craft alive, and keep the passion driven.
I knew I could do it without hiring people to tell me what to do. I could keep a very thin layer of management, level of management. And I could know all the people. I could work with them directly. I felt comfortable with the volume, and I felt comfortable with the manufacturing space. As it has panned out now, 14 years later, we're about a $10-plus million company because of inflation. Mm-hmm. We're about 70 employees, and we're about 55,000 square feet of space. So the space hasn't changed much. The labor has went up. The product has gotten more complex. Mm-hmm. It's become much more labor-intense. And the volume of sales is a product of inflation and capturing more margin.
So really that original vision is very much alive at Premier.
Very much alive. Yeah. I have indoctrinated every person that has joined our company with that philosophy. And today they hold me accountable for that because as an entrepreneur, you know, entrepreneurs
can get
easily
swept up.
Can easily lose your vision. And it's been very, very successful for us. Now, the big challenge comes, and business people have said this to me over and over again, well, how are you going to keep your company vibrant?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
How do you keep it alive?
That's a very, very challenging question.
And I have one simple answer for it, and that is we will never stop growing. We are always going to work at getting better and better. And, you know, that challenge has no end. And every day I am encouraged and I discover new ways for us to get better and better. And so my goal as the CEO, and I'm not sure I feel all that comfortable with that position, but that's really the position now that I hold in this company because I am the visionary for the company. I am the leader of the company. And my driving force is how can we be better? You know, what can we do better today than what we did yesterday? What can we do to help our designers be better?
Mm-hmm.
How can we help ourselves be better?
Yep.
So we work on not only the company being more profitable, we work on helping our people be better people, more whole in their relationships and in their life. How can we be influential with our designers in their lives and their businesses and what they're doing? And how can we help our clients in the end feel really good about what we do?
Marlon, back in 2000, we had the privilege of starting to work with you at your request, and my partner Dennis Klemmer has been with you ever since. And what was some of the thinking of starting with an organizational development, leadership development company like North & Shantz, and in what ways has that perpetuated itself as being effective at Premier?
Well, I was part of this getting better and better process. As an entrepreneur, I started a company in 1991. A lot of people joined us along the way. And once we got to that 50, 60-person level, I began to realize that there's no way that I can continue to bring day-to-day encouragement and value and development to the company as I looked at developing leaders, new leaders.
Yes.
But I didn't want to hire somebody full-time.
Right.
Because there's something about bringing a person in a full-time position that once they're in, they become part of the fabric.
They're part of the system
and they're no longer effective in giving
you the macro view.
So I started looking around for a business consultant. And of course, the opportunities are vast. You know, there's a lot of different ways you can go. But I also wanted to align myself with a firm that lined up spiritually and philosophically with who
certainly.
We are because I didn't want to have an outside firm involved in developing my leadership that didn't subscribe
didn't
to
share
some,
your principles.
Didn't share my principles. And I'm not exactly too sure how we got together, but it was a marriage almost at first sight, you know, and Dennis visited us and we talked and it just seemed to be the right thing. At that point in time, I was doing 100% of the performance reviews. And it was becoming overwhelming. It was something I needed to delegate to my first line supervisors and team leaders. But I was very uncomfortable doing that because they hadn't been developed to be able to handle that task. So Dennis and I began to work on a plan that he would be involved in mentoring them, teaching them, training them on site, firsthand. And this would be done by sitting in every review himself. And that developed a system that we maintain to this day. And it has been incredibly functional. And it's been an incredible training tool. because it's given our supervisors a first-hand training and mentoring and tutoring in dealing with personnel issues and encouraging and motivating and staging some constructive criticisms to help people develop.
Yes.
Then a couple of years later, a year or two into it, it became obvious to me that we needed to really continue to organize ourselves as a management team. To do that, we needed to have regular management meetings where we'd set up objectives and goals. And knowing my style, I was not the person
to do that.
Mm-hmm. There's always a new challenge to pursue. Mm-hmm. There's always something more important than a meeting. And I had a number of people that were key people to me that were in exactly the same position. Mm-hmm. And we would go for months without meetings. I'm not a meeting person.
Right.
So I asked Dennis if he would consider doing that. And so he's become really our chairman of our senior management group. He chairs our meetings. And as a result, we've just been able to do some really, really constructive things. We're now into a management performance review cycle where we review each other on an annual basis as a group. My team actually reviews me. In 14 years, this year, I had my first performance review.
What a great place to be.
Yeah.
I bet you got some very valuable feedback because you've created an environment in which it's safe to give you straightforward feedback.
Absolutely. And it's just really good. It allows you to really reflect. And it also allows you to take inventory of what you are doing and know that you're on the right track.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for the privilege of walking along with the growth of your business. I know for Dennis, he just comes back energized from his opportunities to engage with Premier. Marlon, what for you, obviously you've had a lot of success, but what for you is the most challenging aspect of leadership, or might we say running a business?
There's a lot of challenges in running a business, all of which I find very rewarding, really. The one that probably challenges me the most is dealing with the one or two bad apples in a group.
Yes.
Those that challenge the system, that are not part of the team, that tend to threaten the process.
The alignment that
the
you
alignment
have there with
that
your
we
values
have,
and
the
your goals.
And the goals. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that probably make it the most difficult to stay committed to the course.
Mm-hmm.
And we just cannot allow one or two to step aside. And I think, again, we have to look at the model that Jesus created as he brought alongside of him a group of men. Not all of them were team players.
No.
And he needed to
and
deal with that.
And far from perfect.
And far from perfect. And so I just need to every day reevaluate my position and make sure that a few bad decisions along the way do not skew my values and my commitment and do not change my commitment to the other 99, so to speak.
So the leadership lesson there, Marlon, would be history tells us, precedent tells us that from time to time we will come into relationship with people who will choose not to align themselves
right,
with
absolutely.
Our behavioral and performance standards.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And what we need to do as leaders, I think I hear you saying, is not allow those few to turn us into people who are building our lives against protecting from the damage of those few, but rather share our values and our alignment with the many that would choose to work along with us and to honor it.
It's those challenges that can either destroy us or allow us to become stronger.
Yes.
And I want them to become stronger.
And I think your company is clear proof of that. Earlier, Marlon, you talked about leadership in terms of service. Would that be a fundamental feel for you in terms of how you think about leadership?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Leadership is about serving. That's the model that Jesus really gave to us, and I think it's the perfect leadership model. And then believing in people.
Yeah.
You know, you need to trust people. We created a company of trust. If you go back and you look at the beginning of Premier, there was a few goals that I wrote down, strategic goals in the company development. I wanted everybody to feel trusted. So we have no time clocks, no bells, no buzzers.
Very unusual in a manufacturing industry.
Everybody has a key. The place is on the total honor system. We might have had a minor couple of breachments of that, but you know, as that culture becomes entrenched, it becomes self-perpetuating.
Yes.
And the people really promote it.
Because they want it to be kept
absolutely.
For the value it gives to
absolutely.
Them individually.
And so if there's an infraction along the way, you have to deal with that.
Certainly.
But I've had very, very few need to deal with it. Most of it's dealt with by their own peer group.
Which is the way it should be.
Right.
Well, Marlon, just absolutely terrific to have you here today. And Premier Custom Built is a company to be admired. A final word on leadership for us today, Marlon?
If I was to give advice to young people and how they would develop, I would say that each of us should identify our passion for life. We should then develop the skills and the knowledge that we need to accomplish that passion, We should pursue it with all our heart. Then, once we're there, we need to stay the course.
Stay the course.
We got to stay the course, stay focused. Don't allow the trappings of success along the way to deter our vision. And first or last, and maybe most, is trust God.
Yeah.
And just follow His principles. Believe in His word and follow the great leader.
And focus on serving others.
And focus on serving others.
Marlon, terrific to have you. Thanks for being here today on Straightforward. Everybody have a wonderful day.
North & Shantz continues to provide direction for your future through sustained relationships. We identify issues by conducting assessments, provide assistance during organizational transitions, and develop leaders through coaching and accountability. As always, thank you for listening to Straightforward.